So let's begin. Good evening, and so nice to get to sit with you tonight. People from all over coming together and being quiet and still and doing nothing. Oh my gosh, we must be crazy. I mean, have you ever thought that you would ever find yourself in a group of people and you didn't talk and you were still and you were quiet? So that's what we're beginning to directly experience, what meditation brings us, and it brings us a stillness, a quietness, a silence, a deep, deep solitude silence that enables us to really see things within us that the busyness of our lives can't give us. It just doesn't work that way. It's not the law of nature. So one of the things, and I was going to, first I'm going to remind you, did everyone do their homework? Yeah, I can tell the dog ate it. Sure, the dog ate it. Well, your homework was to get outside. Tis the season to just see and feel and be with what nature has to offer us. And with a quiet mind, one begins to really feel the spaciousness that the truth of nature brings us. So if you didn't get your homework done this week, then let's try to do it this week. And we've been talking about where to look. I mean, we're quiet and we're still and, you know, we're sitting there, not talking. So the Buddha teaches us to look in certain areas. It's like a map from within. Because even if we sit and there's some much needed benefits from just sitting and being quiet and still, but as I said last week, we can't sustain it because of the fact that the unconscious begins to become conscious. And so again, we're dealing with a busy mind and all kinds of things within us. So the Buddha said, look for these certain things. And he said, look within the body. Look at your feelings. Look at your mind. Look in mind states. And in those four foundations of mindfulness, we begin to see for ourselves directly what's going on. What's going on? So we talked about mindfulness of the body last week. And that's so important because some of us, including myself, had no idea what whole body awareness can offer. And we have to find that out for ourselves. It's easy to say, but it takes practice to begin from head to toe, to begin to first just feel whole body awareness. And each time that we sit down, scanning our bodies can be very helpful. And go from your head to toe or from your toe to your head. But getting the feel that there truly is a whole body. And so what happens is we begin to really live through this wholeness, this body wholeness, instead of just taking everything to the mind. And that takes practice because we're not conditioned to do that. We're more conditioned to think about what we're thinking about and then let the mind decide how we're going to live our lives or solve our problems. And it doesn't work. You know, we're not getting happier or finding ways to become happier through the mind. So that's important because the mind is useful, but it's a terrible master and a great servant. So that's our conditioning. And so the body, yes, mindfulness of the body. How to open to that, how to train ourselves. That's what we're doing. We're just retraining habits, you know, things that we've been doing for a long time until someone said, hey, wait a minute, there's another way. It's optional. And yeah, it takes practice, patience, it takes commitment, but it's worth all of that. So the second foundation of mindfulness is to look at sensations. And one of the first things we discover when we start looking around is the entire body is just vibrating, just full of sensations. But it doesn't take long for those sensations to morph into feelings. Because as we perceive life, every second through the six senses, then we have a natural phenomena that happens in all of us. We like it, we don't like it, or we're not interested in it. And so that's conditioning, but we've been conditioned from our ancestors who had a lot more to a lot harder life and not such a safe life. So it's in our DNA, and that's okay. But what we have found that when we don't understand the true nature of these feelings, again, they begin to take on a role that's not necessary to the extent of where we have been conditioned to. And then, of course, feelings, extreme deep feelings trigger us. Something triggers us and it goes to emotions. And those are strong, very strong feelings that overwhelm us. But we all have them. We all have feelings, we all have these emotions, and many times this is where we get lost, and it causes us a lot more suffering than needs to be, and that's what the practice does. And so, feelings arise, and what we begin to see for ourselves are, and we have, it takes a while, just like it took us a while to be conditioned, it'll take us a while to see the true nature of feelings. They arise and they fall away. And so they're impermanent. They don't stay around. Unless, and we learn this quickly, unless we take it to the mind. And then the mind wants to talk about it, of course, have a great dialogue, and triggers us, re-triggers us. And so, you know, woe is me with my emotions. So, and one person, at least she's a neuroscientist, Jill Taylor, says the average time it takes for it to move through the nervous system and body, she's talking about emotions, is only a minute and a half. I don't know if that's true. Who knows? But we can find out. But the main point of the lesson is all of this phenomena that we're dealing with as human beings have a lifespan. A short lifespan. So everything is constantly rising and falling away. And you say, well, so what? Well, there's something magical about that. Once we start seeing it for ourselves, then what we see is it is phenomena. It's not us. You know, it's not our feelings. It's feelings that we all have, you know. So that's important to find out within nature, and that's one of the things that we do, is to see how temporary everything is. And through that knowledge, that wisdom, you don't have to do anything, is what happens is that's what there's a transformation that happens. You begin not to feel like you are your feelings. You begin to see and feel that you're not your mind, but that we do have feelings and we do have the mind and the body. So what about that? What can help us with that? Well, the more we get to know the truth of all the phenomena that we live with, the more we are more prone not to identify. Oh, but I want my feelings. Well, it's okay to have your feelings. It's okay to have your mind. But the thing about it is when you grab a hold of them or you identify with them, then you're taking yourself in a whole nother direction of living that's going to cause more suffering. And this suffering is optional. That's what the Buddha found out, is he found out that nature, all the aspects of nature has a nature of its own, a life of its own. So how could it be us? You know, if it's just phenomena, then why are we identifying with all this stuff? Well, and that's what the practice helps us to see. So, in meditation, I've said to you before, we begin to use the acronym RAIN. R-A-I-N. And it's so useful because we can do a quick one, RAIN, recognize, allow, investigate, and know that that process is going to nurture us. So that it can be used quickly. And then Tara Brock, who's a clinical psychologist, she says with the N of that, RAIN, recognize, allow, investigate. We bring those emotions within us. It's going to rattle us, you know. We're not going to feel like we're necessarily nurtured, even though in time we will. But at the beginning, we're just not. And so she says, you know, it's a great time to just say some nice things to yourself. You know, you're okay. These are emotions. You know, she just short, sweet things that you can nurture yourself. Why not? You know? So that's important because it's giving us an important tool that we can use all the time, and it works. And so self-compassion, which is a prerequisite to waken up, it happens automatically when we begin to see nature as it is. Because guess what? we happen to be nature too. And so when we really begin to experience that, you know, oh gosh, I do feel nature. I do feel like I'm part of nature. Then we're getting closer to the truth of how to live. So self-compassion is a prerequisite. And as you well know, it's not something that we have been taught. Now, in some of the Asian countries, I know Anand Tupten says that in the Tibetan culture, everyone knows about compassion and self-compassion. Can you imagine growing up with that kind of conditioning? No, we didn't have that conditioning at all. We had the conditioning of not being very nice to ourselves. And so that phenomena and that way of treating ourselves gets in the way of opening to the truth of all the things in life. So, also the practice too with the foundation of feelings and emotions. What was I going to say about it? Yeah. Oh, I know. I remember. Then also within our practice comes quite naturally with the practice a sacred pause. Now, that was a sacred pause. You might not have realized it, but I'm feeling very sacred right now. It's not because I'm old, okay? I just want to clarify that. So that pause allows a space that we're not used to having, but we begin to see the possibility. And then so instead of being so reactive and you know, our reactions are not usually useful. They cause a lot of suffering for ourselves and others. Then we have a choice. Then we begin to say, okay, you know, I have fallen in this hole 1,000 times. I have practiced enough where I am seeing actually what's going on. So is there a possibility that I could not react? Yes, it happens. And when it happens, it's encouraging because we know, God, you know, I didn't create more issues around, you know, my emotion. And so it breaks the reactivity. Now, we're not saying don't feel your emotions. We have to feel these emotions. That's part of it. But what are we doing with them? Are we making ourselves more miserable? Or are we, can we handle the truth of it and know what to do? Okay, now I'm running out of time again. So the next one is mindfulness of the mind. There won't be a teacher, a long-time teacher, who won't say that the mind is probably our biggest problem, our biggest issue. Why? Well, we were raised in a culture of the mind is the leader. The mind is the most important. And everything around us as we have developed as human beings was all about the mind. And then all of a sudden somebody says, it's the mind that's causing most of our problems, our issues, our suffering. And this is the big part. It's optional. And just like I said, that there's the mind is the same way. It's phenomena. It's not who we are. It shouldn't be the boss of us. We should get to know its true nature, because when we have that knowledge, it serves us instead of dictates to us what we should be doing. And the mind's not wise. It's just not wise, so it doesn't solve anything. And, well, there's a time where we can put it all together and help solve with the mind, but that has to be deliberate. And so I want to go to the fourth foundations of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of mind states. There's more to it than that, but that's what I'm going to stress. Mind states. Again, in looking at the mind, one of the things we begin to see is we begin to carry these mind states. They're like records, recordings. Like we have the top 10 that we keep saying to ourselves over and over and over again. Well, once we start waking up and we begin to see these mind states for what they are, which is their phenomena that we've attached to and we've identified with, and we think they're true, until lo and behold, we open to the possibility that they're not. And sure enough, they're not. So we're telling ourselves all the time some not very supportive things. You know, and if we're going to talk to ourselves, because we do, we have this inner dialogue that, by the way, is not necessary, because it gets away with the present moment. So, the pause is coming back again. So, looking at the mind, looking at those mind states are so important because, yes, they can be shifted. And they can be, we can see the truth of them, which they arise and fall away too, except for the ones that keep following us around, gigging us all the time. Yeah, something about our worthiness, unworthiness that we've been taught. Dalai Lama said he didn't know what it was. What do you mean, people, Western students are feeling unworthy? What is this unworthiness, he said. He couldn't fathom it. Why? Because it doesn't exist in his culture. So all the things we start saying to ourselves beats us down in lots of ways. And so we're missing parts of our life by brooding over what we're saying to ourselves. So that's all I can say tonight, because my time's running out. But the most important thing with this lesson of four foundations of mindfulness is stay with them. Know that these are real important. And anytime you can hear about them, read about them, talk about them, the truth, what happens any time we hear the truth, whether we read the truth, we hear the truth, we see the truth, it does something. It transforms. I mean, I'm not saying that it does it immediately, but the truth is healing. that's his true nature of truth. It heals us. And so I truly am going to stop. And then at this time, we're going to open it up to you. We're going to let Randy come over. Come over.
Okay.
Come over, Rover. And then we'll open it up to you for questions and clarifications. And there are no wrong questions. There only can be some wrong answers. So you can't do it wrong. Thank you.